I'm not going mad.
Welcome to Gatekeeper, a podcast about booking from the bookers and gatekeepers who decide who's in, who's out. Also, there's other stuff.
And now, your host of Gatekeeper, artistic director of the Hollywood Improv, Jamie Clam.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 18th episode of Gatekeeper. My name is Jamie Flam, and I am the gatekeeper. And it is Andrew Steven, the producer of the show, that put the really cool effect on my voice when I just said that I am the gatekeeper. Do I sound relaxed? Well, damn it, I should, because I just got back from a weeks-long vacation. That's right, a week up in Big Bear, California. And I think it would be funny, as I describe my vacation, for Andrew to lay down the sounds of the beach. I mean, the sounds of the beach when I'm talking about being in the forest. How funny will that be? I mean, right now you can hear the sound of the waves and the seagulls flying over and any other sounds they can come up with. But guess what? I was in a forest where there were also birds trees and I guess it would just be the sound of rustling leaves. I don't know the sounds of the forest. I'm moving on from this weird tangent. I recommend everyone out there take a vacation. I talk so much about the stress related to this job of booking a club. And granted, I'm not healed completely, but just a few days away, disconnected, is so important and something I think a lot of people might take for granted. So if you're dealing with a lot of stress at whatever job it is you do, hey, take some time off. You've deserved it. You've earned it. And get some R and also some R. And speaking of R's, I got a couple of them for you. One, ramekins. They are small, almost little bowls, but very tiny that you might put a mustard or a sauce in, I believe. Look it up. Ramekins, they are on your internet. The other R I want to talk about, reductress. Now, if you don't know what reductress is, it is the first and only satirical women's magazine. It was founded in 2013. It is based out of New York, and the mission of Reductress is to take on the outdated perspectives and condescending tone of popular women's media through the eyes of the funniest women in comedy today. And I'm really excited about my guest that joined me for a great conversation. Her name is Sarah Pappalardo, and she is a writer, an editor, a performer, a producer. She's a podcaster. She does the podcast Mouth Time, and she's the co-author of How to Win at Feminism, A Guide to Having It All, and then some, which is the first book that will be coming out from Reductress. So we had a great conversation. We're going to kick it to there right now with the final sound of a ramekin. Make that happen, Andrew. Enjoy the episode. Gatekeeper. Welcome to Gatekeeper. I'm very excited to have a guest in front of me right now. She is a founder of Reductress, a wonderful women's magazine founded in 2013. It's the first and only satirical women's magazine. She's going to tell us more about that and all about other amazing things in the world of gates and gatekeeping. Sarah Pappalardo, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Good to see you.
It's great to see you.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk to you today, Sarah. I have to admit that, you know, talking about feminism and issues in that realm as a white male who happens to be a gatekeeper, it can be a little uncomfortable and not wanting to say the wrong thing, not knowing what the right thing is to say, and just bumbling.
But you're trying, and that's good.
Yeah,
it's a good boy. No, it's great. Like, sometimes it's just really appreciated that any man is willing to even listen. So it's pretty refreshing. And, you know, I'm happy to talk to anyone who, is just willing to kind of hear us out.
Awesome. Well, then let's dive in. So Sarah, you're in town from New York City.
Yes.
Where you live.
I do live there.
Mm-hmm. How do you like that?
I love it. I kind of love to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got all the right, annoying things and challenges that keep me
honking cab horns.
Keep me angry. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the big one.
That keeps me hungry. So it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you're in LA for a week and you're here, and we met because you're doing a big show here at the Hollywood Improv Unfortunately, well, this will go out the day of the show.
Oh, well, that's actually a quick turnaround. Yeah. Come to the show.
Yeah. So this is tomorrow night. So give a quick plug for what the show is tomorrow here at the Hollywood Improv.
So the show is Reductress presents the Brotherhood of Women. We put together a stand-up variety show with some amazing folks on board. We've got Emily Heller, Barbara Gray, Mo Welch, Sabrina Jalise. And we're doing a panel at the end where we're going to answer all your ridiculous questions, give some ridiculous advice back. It's going to be a good time.
Awesome. You've been doing live shows for Reductress in New York.
Yes.
Great. And so this is your first one in LA.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So you know, go to the Hollywood Improv website, go to Reductress. I saw it's on the top of your website as well to get tickets for this great event, which is tonight. If you're listening to it, the
tonight.
Day this drops.
Tonight.
And if you're listening to it another time, sorry.
It's a shame, honestly. But it was a great show.
I believe you post pictures.
Oh, of course.
Great. So check out their
Insta.
Social. Check out their Insta.
Yeah.
So Reductress. Tell us all about that, and then we'll get into more about your background.
Sure. So my partner, Beth Newell and I started Reductress in 2013. It kind of came to me with an idea. Oh, why isn't there a fake women's magazine? Why isn't there like a satirical women's magazine? We're like, oh, there has to be. We're like Googling, and no one had actually done it in any meaningful way. A lot of people have kind of poked and prodded at the idea, but no one really did it. So we're like, well, if we're going to do this, we better fucking do it. And we spent 4 months developing the site, got a small group of girls together and wrote about 50 or 60 articles, and we launched. And since then, it's been good. We wrote a book. We have a podcast. We've got some other awesome projects coming up, and it's been good.
So what was the original thinking behind it? Why did you want to fill this void in the world of satirical women's magazines?
A few reasons. I think both Beth and I were coming from a place where things that we come from a sketch comedy and improv background, and a lot of things that we would maybe pitch in a room that was maybe female centric, coming from a female experience. A lot of guys just didn't get it. To no fault of their own. It's just, if it's not part of your experience, it's, why would it
we're
be
idiots.
Funny? Yeah.
We're all
well,
dumb idiots.
No, I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys have your own like dick ball stuff that we don't know anything about.
That's hilarious.
Just kidding. We know everything about it because you talk about it all the time. So, you know, there are just a lot of things that, I guess weren't really getting kind of picked up or received well. And, we just realized there was kind of not a space for women to create what they want. And then of course the fact that there just really wasn't this particular thing out in the world yet, that it just seemed like the perfect way to also comment on women's media and the way that media talks down, women's media talks down to women, that preys on insecurities and fears to sell us things. And more recently, preys on us using the guise of empowerment and feminism to sell us things. And
what is an example of that? And I know what you're talking about, but it is prevalent. Can you explain that?
Sure. Let's take, you know, are you familiar with like the Dove campaigns in the past few years?
No.
All right. Oh.
Tell me about the Dove campaigns.
Man. Oh, you're going to have fun with it. So maybe starting a few years ago, they actually put out some good campaigns where they had larger women in their ads to sell a lotion. And it was like, hey, look, we're not a size 2, which is pretty cool. But then... from then on, it's like they seem to like run out of ideas of ways to empower women. Like it got to the point where they'd put on these like ridiculous social, like clearly fake social experiments. They'd be like, okay, we had 10 women who hate themselves describe themselves to a sketch artist. And the way they described themselves was far more hideous than the sketch artist's saw them. Like it was just such like a convoluted idea to show like, see, women hate themselves. Like another one was they're like, women with curly hair also hate themselves. One of the hardest things as a woman is to have curly hair. So they would like put on this like big party where like a band played an empowering song about curly hair so that like little girls could know that they could grow up with curly hair and be okay. And yeah, so just there's all these weird stunts that they've done just ultimately to like sell lotion.
Sure. How's the lotion? Has that improved over the years?
I don't think so. I have never bought it.
Because that makes it tougher.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I use Kiehl's. It's way better.
And how's Kiehl's marketing?
They don't market. They don't market. It's so good they don't have to.
You hear that, Dove?
Uh-huh.
You can say a lot more sometimes through silence.
Maybe you should work on yourself first.
That was a fun tangent.
Yeah.
Getting back to Reductress.
Mm. Keeping gates.
So, yeah, keeping gates. So, as you start this website, it's taking off. And, and seemingly, it's going great. I mean, there are so many articles and on this website.
This is true. Yeah, we edit and write many articles. It's going well. You know, our day to day is maybe like 50% going through pitches, editing pieces, writing in house, teasing out what's going on in the news cycle, writing the podcast and working on a few other things. So there's a lot of decision making going on. You know, a lot of like judging our own takes in the office when we're trying to like generate ideas and write stuff in house. And then there's a lot of just going through tons and tons of pitches that come in from our outside contributors.
And I one thing I love to do on this podcast is really show people that sometimes you just dive in, you have an idea. So take us from like the moment you guys decided you're doing it to now. Like what does that look like? And how did it organically get to the point where you're coming to the world famous Hollywood to do a big show?
Yeah, it's not as glamorous as one would think. We spent the first year, I had like quit my full-time job after we launched the site and just went freelance. And we were both kind of just like bouncing around and trying to make money where we could, but the site wasn't making money in any shape or form.
Was that a goal from day one? To make profitable
money? Yeah. I mean, I think we wanted it to be a sustainable thing because I think, a lot of the problems with these labors of love is they end up kind of draining you and then they go away. And I don't know, then it would just be like all for naught. So like the goal is to make it sustainable and also, give us an opportunity. Like the website is just one part of the way we, satirize all of women's media. And we wanted to use the website as a launching pad to do all of those other things, kind of like whatever, you know, whatever, like, Kathy Lee and Hoda would do in every aspect of media, like we want to do via satire.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, the first year we were just like, well, this is a blog. I have no idea what we're doing. We did a small Kickstarter and did a redesign. And I think that's where we started to gain traction. We started posting daily instead of weekly. We were working out of this kind of artists co-working space in the Lower East Side that was just like plywood tables and like the toilet didn't really work. So like anytime someone took a dump, like it just like wouldn't go through the pipes. Like it just like would seep. I'm not joking. It would seep through the walls. And that place is still there. It's despite gentrification.
Still,
But we did move uptown to a smaller hovel, a smaller windowless hovel. Yeah, since then, you know, like, we've definitely gotten a good response from people, and that led to some other opportunities and partnerships and things like that, so that we could grow our staff just a little bit. We now have like a small handful of editorial staff and a couple of interns on board. And yeah.
And how many writers are there? That's
a lot of writers. We probably have about like 30 regular contributors at any given time, but we've had well over 100 over the course of Reductress.
And so as a gatekeeper of Reductress, like how does that, as far as editorial goes, like what is the process if someone wants to be a writer?
Good question. So anyone who's interested can email intern@reductress.com for pitching details. But the gist is, not unlike The Onion, asking for 10 headlines and a short description. And we're really just looking for, is the headline funny? Is the joke in the headline? Is it clear? Is it concise? Is it relevant in any way, shape, or form to either the female experience or something that's, you know, going on that's just universally relevant?
Is gender important to who's contributing?
No.
No?
No, absolutely. We have a bunch of guys who do contribute. I mean, it's definitely a little more challenging, I think, coming from just like a generic male experience, mm-hmm. to kind of tap into what women do how women think.
What do women do, and how do they think?
It's tricky. I mean, it's complicated, and you know, but there are some guys who really do get it, and they are really consistent and really funny and just get it. I don't know. Maybe they listen to their girlfriends. I don't really know how they do it.
And what would be some examples of, like, maybe submissions of people that aren't relevant or aren't getting it?
Well, I think one big thing we see is these kind of maybe phrases that you hear a lot too, like ghosting, you know. So we'll get like a lot of ghosting pitches, and that doesn't mean that like whatever joke they're making about, or like double entendre about ghosting they're making, is inherently flawed or unfunny. It's just we get literally 50 ghosting related pitches a week, or something about thigh gap 20 times a week, and so we just can't take it. I mean, we've kind of covered that territory a long time ago.
I know so many things, and of course I know what ghosting is.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, I'm very savvy. But to a listener that didn't know what ghosting was, which of course I know, well, how would you describe it?
And I mean, since you already know this, I'll keep it brief.
Sure, yeah.
Because you definitely know. It's when you are kind of whatevering with someone, you know, like sort of dating. Maybe like you're in textual contact, and then you just kind of disappear off the face of the earth.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. So...
I do know
it's
what
a
that
hot
is.
Hot toppy.
On both ends of the spectrum.
Oh, no. Well, I'm not, as long as it's both sides.
It's just, you know, like, and we don't have to get into dating. Never mind.
That's a different podcast.
Right? So you mentioned there's a podcast as well.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's called Mouth Time. It is, takes place kind of in the world if Reductress were a real thing with real editors and their points of view were like, base reality. That's what it is. Basically a satire of the Cosmopolitan podcast. If you ever just give it a try, it's insane. So we bring on some characters in the women's interest arena, and our hosts Quen and Div are just
how do you spell Div?
D-I-V.
Mm-hmm.
And Quen. And Quen, not Quinn.
Yeah.
And they're just insane.
How many episodes have you done of that?
We are 20 episodes in.
Deep in the game. Congrats.
We're doing like 8 episodes this week. So.
Oh, while you're in LA.
It's a busy season. Yes.
Awesome. And this is the 18th episode of this. So I'm right behind you.
Mm.
Pat on my back.
Mm-hmm.
How has the podcast evolved since it started?
I think we're just figuring out how to keep it fun, especially because we're dabbling in territory that if done incorrectly could be very mean and very making fun of women instead of making fun of women's media. So a lot of what we were kind of workshopping before we really dove in was how to keep it fun and interesting and really just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think we're still working on it, but Anna and Nicole do an amazing job at really keeping it weird.
Keeping it weird.
Good.
That's
yes.
Awesome. Weird is good.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of weird, your childhood. I'm just kidding. I don't know about your childhood, but life story. Go.
Oh, woof. Born in Boston.
Classic town.
Yep.
You got the Celtics.
This is true. That's it. That's it.
Chowder.
Yeah.
I love chowder, by the way. Are you a soup head like me?
Love soup.
Yep.
Honestly, I really love its filling and wet nature.
All right. We're getting to the good stuff here.
Yeah, I know. This is getting heavy. And then I mostly grew up in Bedford, New Hampshire, which was kind of a funny town. Seth Meyers' mom was like my field hockey coach one year. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Was she funny?
She's awfully sweet.
Yeah.
She's probably the sweetest one I've ever met. And I don't know, New Hampshire was just like a suburb. It wasn't very exciting. And I went to Chicago for school. That's where I got into improv. Well, actually, I was taking improv classes in high school in Boston. And it's like, oh, I just want to do this all the time. And that's really mostly how I spent college. Like college itself was an afterthought. I started musical directing shows at the Second City to get classes for free. And that was kind of a cool way to take the back tour into directing, mm-hmm. and learning sketch from that angle.
When you say musical directing, what meaning?
On the keys, writing songs, arranging songs, playing piano for sketch shows.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, not anymore. Like, I'm functional on the piano, but it's not a thing.
Can you play
I do.
More than one key at the same time to make a desired sound?
I can produce some music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I kind of just got into playwriting for a while. That's kind of what brought me to New York. I was just writing plays and kind of holed up and was a little quiet in the comedy community. I was still doing sketch and improv for fun, but I was just writing a ton on my own. Put a couple of shows up. Then I actually got back into sketch at the Magnet Theater, which is where I met Beth. And I guess the rest is history.
I love it. And so was that the point? You were like, let's start Reductress. And here you are.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely one of those points in my life where I was like writing every minute of my not day job. And, you know, it was kind of like, all right, I'm either going to do something in the field that I want to be in, or I'm going to keep working at a digital agency forever. Mm. And this was just kind of like, this was the thing that made sense.
Well, in regards to you as a writer, and then also your work ethic with Reductress, that's another theme of this podcast, is how do people get shit done? Mm. How do you get shit done?
Be organized.
What does that look like for you?
Well, so part of my day job when I was, before Reductress, I was a project manager and producer. And I think that really helped me understand like triple constraints, like time. It's either going to be done quickly or well. Or what's the other one?
Quickly or well or terribly?
It's time, quality, cost. There we go.
Oh, TQC.
This guy knows. Yeah. So it's like, you know, one of those has to eat shit usually. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's just like I project manage my life. Like it's kind of boring, but I just stay really, really organized and I block out different parts of my day for administrative work and answering emails, and different parts of my day for one type of creative work or another type of creative work. And I just stick to it. That's the thing. Like I try to structure the stuff that just has to get done, that doesn't require a lot of thought, first. And I mean, that doesn't mean that I don't stare at a blank Word document any less than anybody else. And some days I'll just like spend 6 hours staring at looking at my cat and then spend 1 hour writing. But,
your cat's like, stop glaring at me.
Yeah. But I guess like even just in like beating out ideas, like I really like lists. So if I'm working on a big daunting project, I'm just like, all right, like let's outline this thing. All right, let's refine the outline. All right, let's refine it even more so that when I'm actually writing, it practically writes itself. And I mean, that's even how I would write a piece for Reductress too, is really just like list it out, beat it out, and then
like what
from there.
Like software or apps do you use, if any, to help you keep organized?
I tried a few. Like I tried crazy stuff like the full screen blocker so that there's no distraction other than writing. That I never stuck to it. I think I just do like good old fashioned like goal setting, like small bite-sized goals. So then I can be like, all right, I'm going to get up in 20 minutes and then just like walk around and like eat some garbage out of the fridge and come back to it. But
why do you
keep
your garbage in your fridge?
That's a good question.
And why do you eat it?
I don't know. My diet's weird.
I mean, you look so healthy. Like
thank you.
Might be a
thank you.
A tip, I guess.
Yeah, it's low carb garbage. It's really helped me.
I book a comedy club, by the way.
Oh.
Whenever I make terrible jokes, I like to follow up with. Oh. I'm a gatekeeper in comedy.
It's good. I like it.
Thank you so much.
Good work keeping gates.
So I mean, going back to gates then.
Yeah.
I mean, what are the gatekeepers now for you? Like you obviously want to take Reductress to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? How do you stand out? Who are you? Is it trying to get money from now more advertisers? What does it look like as far as the gatekeepers in the world of magazine publishing?
Sure. There's a couple. Yeah, there's that side of like the branded content thing that everybody must do now. So you're kind of pitching something to a yogurt company, which is way different than, you know, pitching a TV show, but darn it, we're doing both. So we're trying to kind of, it's challenging to funnel your voice in those two directions and, but still have it be coherent and be like, that is inherently our brand. So yeah, it's kind of, it's a lot of guessing what some arbitrary corporate decision maker is going to make, just as much as you're kind of guessing what some arbitrary network executive would make if you're pitching a show. And I wish I could say that I've really nailed the differences. You know, I think we all kind of have a gist that like corporations are pretty conservative. And
you'll play.
Yeah.
One of the most conservative,
very conservative. There.
I approached them about the eat fucking Yoplait.
Yeah.
Campaign.
Didn't fly?
No.
Oh, jeez.
They wouldn't let me in the building.
What a shame.
And I'm not allowed back.
Wow.
I'm the booker of a comedy club.
Wow. Yeah.
It's become a trope of this podcast, I think.
Keeping gates.
Keeping gates. Well, let's talk about the big hot button issue. Mm. And it's something that I think a lot of listeners to this podcast are curious about because we've had some great female guests, Zoe Friedman, who booked Jimmy Kimmel and David Letterman and Comedy Central and now works at Blue Ribbon. But, you know, females in comedy seems to be an issue in feminism. Where do you feel that is at? Do you think there's been progress in the last few years? And how do you feel Reductress is helping hopefully to forward that?
Yeah, it's so hot right now. And I think with this like second wave comedy boom, women have almost defined it in a way. It's not entirely, but I think it's reshaped this, the whole world of comedy right now. Like there was never an Amy Schumer or a Broad City out there in the 80s or the 90s. Like there is now. And I think it's changing what we see as normal in terms of comedy, like what's acceptable, which is fantastic. I mean, of course, I really want to eventually live in a world where we're not even having to have the conversation like, why are women in comedy? Right. Are women even funny? But I think we might be on the path there. So I guess with Reductress, we're just making space for more young, like green comedy writers to get their ideas out in the world and also have a community in their respective city or town of women who do the same thing. And when we can, we try to work with our contributors to do other fun stuff and get them to work together and just make more good material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know kind of the LA landscape, you know, from indie shows to clubs and, you know, the certain tropes, you know, certainly the clubs get a lot of heat for not having as many women on lineups. And so there's been a big push. You know I personally always, you know, go for diversity on any lineup, but there's the crazy politics and all that. Like in New York, is that still a big issue?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's any different at all. I mean, I can't speak to it personally, thank God, because I've like avoided the game of stand up. I admire everyone who does it, but my God, I just it's brutal. But when it's good, it's good. Yeah, it's still an issue, and it's, I mean, maybe you could speak to this more. Like, it just seems to me like most bookers are still men. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means that a certain kind of taste is overrepresented. That's really it. And I think it just, that trickles down into there being fewer women on stage, which inspires fewer women to try it in the first place or to stick with it in that really precarious time, like of open mic level stuff. So it's a hard hurdle to get over, but
you make a good point. I do think that that's an important part of that process for young stand-up is it is a very male-centric at the open mic level, even that isn't always welcoming. And that, how that will affect, you know, the longevity of someone being like, I do not have the patience to get through this for the next several years to make it. I think, you know, at the club level, we're always looking for more females. I mean, just the pool of people that send in their veils, you know, like it's a much lower number of females. So on any given night, you know, you, and certainly if you look at our lineups, especially in our lab too, you know, there's lineups where we have, you know, all or most women. But then there's nights too. And it's, and we know because, you know, people will retweet or like a picture of our lineup and be like, you know, we have one woman and, you know, they have two shows on our main room stage tonight. Mm. So we're very aware of it. And, you know, I want this place to be a place of progress and show that. But yeah. we're under the microscope more than ever.
Yeah. I mean,
and for good reason.
There's like a kind of a secondary problem, or at least one we've had only in New York recently, is that we want to get the best women on our show, of course. So we're like, all right, who's around? And it's like, she just went to LA. She just got staffed on a show. Oh, how about her? Oh, yeah, she's just going to be in LA for a week. She'll be right back, but she will not be there for your show. And it's just this, like, the good thing that's happening right now is because women are now being seen and respected, is that when you're good, you just shoot right into, you know, the desired path and you get staffed on a show, you get your special. And then it's kind of just hard to, catch them and book them. So that's really good, but there is still just overall, the pool is so much smaller that, you know, what are you going to do? Find more youngins?
Yeah, you hope.
Yeah.
Would you give any advice to, you know, young women in the comedy world, be it stand up or improv or anything else, to, you know, maybe accelerate quicker, or anything that you've learned in, you know, facing all the gatekeepers as a female writer and producer?
I mean, the big thing is just stick with it, because so much of this is just the doing and the doing and the doing to be proficient at this craft, and not be daunted by a bad crowd, not be daunted by crowds that don't get it, and just keep consuming as much comedy as possible. 10 years ago, you might have seen a certain set of things that were popular that you couldn't necessarily relate to, but the more you consume and the more you get out there, there are women who are doing something that's uniquely them, and you might find that person that's like, hey, I didn't know you could do that, and you're doing it well. And it's just let yourself be inspired by what other people are doing, because they are out there.
I love it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the idea of tokenism, a word and phrase that I use frequently.
All the time.
But the idea of like affirmative action and this perception that, you know, when there are females on a lineup or in a writer's room or involved in any way, that they're just trying to fulfill a quota by the producers for an outward look.
No. See, there is a problem with tokenism, because it's a thing that is happening, and there is a way to staff your show so that it is diverse in a way that doesn't promote that idea. First thing to do is to not hire one woman on your staff, or one black woman, or one Asian man, or one gay woman. Like, that is exactly what's going to keep that idea going, that they just got hired. And they're less likely to even put themselves out there in a room where there's nobody like them. But,
or all eyes on them are like, need an Asian gay joke right now.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's just
Trevor.
And also, it's just not, that's not diversity. Diversity is not 11 men and one woman. You know, the quality of content can be so much better when there's a diverse range of experiences, and all of those people feel secure enough to share those experiences. It's going to make for a better show. I mean, if you really do hire 12 guys from Harvard, how different are their takes going to be, really? I just think that diversity makes for better content, period. But when it is mishandled and when it is just like, oh, we're just going to put this on because we have to, it just makes everyone actually believe that that's a thing that's happening. When it doesn't have to. There are talented people out there, but you can't, I don't know. You just have to be thoughtful about how you staff things.
Do you feel there's any, whether it's live venues or shows or anything that's doing it right, that stand out to you?
Broad City has a really kick-ass diverse room. Let's see, Sam B. I mean, you know, of course that's like a woman skewing room, but yeah, I mean, it's great. There are still a bunch of men who write for it too, who are awesome. Let's see, Seth Meyers just hired a few really fucking awesome women, that are, they're just doing an awesome job. Yeah, I mean, that's all that comes to mind right now, but I know it's really, it's been really challenging in the late night sphere to kind of get that. But that's just because, again, like, it's the problem that there's not as many women coming up as we would like to see. But I think that's slowly changing every year.
Yeah, seemingly it feels like it, at least on my end. How do we, you know, moving into the future, avoid even having to have this conversation? Is that 5 years down the line? 20 years?
I hope it's sooner, but
6 months.
You know, let's be optimistic. Let's just
maybe
say, like,
your show tomorrow night.
Months, it's going to change everything.
Maybe your show tonight at the Improv is going to change it all.
Yeah,
change the discourse.
Me hopey. I think that we all have to come to the table and under the same assumption that diversity makes a better show. Really, it just does. And maybe this isn't exactly a widespread idea, because especially when comedy is so personal and based on personal experience, it's kind of hard to feel that another person's ideas are valid. But I just really hope that people start to have an open mind and think that maybe their experience isn't like necessarily mainstream or the most widely accessible or anything like that.
Well, luckily, it looks like Trump is going to be coming into office, and as a, you know, bold feminist himself, I think that bodes well for our future.
Definitely.
As Americans.
Yeah. I mean, that press secretary is really like, she's a feminist icon already, just standing quietly behind him all the time. Very inspiring.
Absolutely. If you don't excuse me, I'm just going to quickly do a Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge Allegiance to, I'm just kidding. I'm the Booker of a Comedy Club. Well, third time's always the charm. Comedy comes in threes. So, Reductress, what's the future? What's the, what do you have, a 5-year plan and a 10-year plan?
Yeah, we really want to go Oprah in the next 5 years. So hopefully we get there.
Like, but, we do The Color Purple.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. We want to be on Broadway, live. We want a chai. We want a cable network.
Is she known for her chais? I mean, I know that she is.
I think she has a branded chai at Starbucks.
Oh, really?
I checked.
What's it called?
So, and I check, let me tell you. Yeah, we have a book coming out this October 25th called How to Win at Feminism. It's a manual on feminism from a women's magazine, which is completely correct in every way. And you should read it, pre-order it.
Is it just a anthology of stuff from the website?
It's all new stuff.
All new stuff.
Yeah. So check it out. And check out Mouth Time.
The podcast. So those are the things. And then how big do you want to build this thing? What would be the perfect dream scenario?
Is to have used every viable medium to comment on women's media.
With the hope that it no longer needs.
Yes, to thus end all commentary altogether. Put me out of a job.
Thank you, Sarah, for joining me.
Thank you.
And just lastly, just give a, where can people find you and Reductress online?
You can find me at Your Papalardo on Twitter. And you can find Reductress at reductress.com, at Reductress, you know, all those places.
Awesome. And so any parting advice for anyone that, you know, is knocking on doors and might be hearing no a lot?
Yeah, embrace the failure. It's going to happen to everyone. And people don't talk about it nearly enough. If your pitches get rejected from anywhere, if your packet gets rejected, that does not mean that you're the least funny person on earth. It just means for 70 different arbitrary reasons, it might not have been a good match. And especially with the breadth and diversity of comedy right now, not every show, not every website is right for you or you right for them. Find your niche. Again, just like consume as much as you can and find where your voice makes sense. And chase after that, and then just don't fucking quit.
That's so perfect for you to end with that, because it really perfectly paraphrases how I end every show, which is to work on your craft endlessly, be a professional, be undeniable, and be cool as fuck always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
For more episodes of Gatekeeper, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me online at jamieflam.com and at jamieflam on Twitter. A very special thanks to the Sideshow Network, The Hollywood Improv, Andrew Stephen, Sean Merrick, Roddy Swearingen, and producer Buddy Peace for the awesome music at the top and end of this episode. And be sure to check out hollywood.improv.com for updates on great new shows coming up in the main room and the lab.